Welcome to the Good Life EDU podcast presented by the Nebraska ESU Coordinating Council. I'm your host, Andrew Easton. Thanks for joining us as we discuss the latest in digital learning across Nebraska and around the country. All right, I'd like to welcome everybody back for another episode of the Good Life EDU podcast. And, you know, our ESU network statewide serves schools and supports schools in so many different ways. And I love that we have the opportunity on the podcast to connect with different regions of the state and educators in that region to learn some of the things that they're doing that is oftentimes reflective of what is going on across Nebraska. And so really excited for us to have a conversation today in that special education vein of things here for our audience. We're talking about behavior supports at ESU 4. And so I'm really grateful to Danny Potter, who's a special education coordinator at ESU 4, and Cassie Hauser, who's a behavior consultant at ESU 4, for joining us for today's conversation. So we can learn a little bit more about what those supports look like and just to learn about that work. And so, first of all, Danny, Cassie, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. We're excited to be here.
Thanks for having us. If there's anything we can talk about, it's our job and behavior.
Well, let's just start right there then, Cassie. I guess for folks that are not maybe as steeped in this conversation, I would assume then for students who are in need of behavior support, there's probably an identification process. And so can you kind of speak to how we understand that a student is in need of these types of supports?
Yeah, so here at the ESU, when we think about our behavior services, it often starts with a referral. And there are several trends within those referrals that we're seeing. So generally, it's the classroom teacher who's having a concern with student behaviors. However, we've also seen that it comes from the principal. We've had a parent reach out and the concern has come from the parent. And so the way of the referral is pretty open. As Danny will say, service is our middle name. So if they have a concern, we're there. However, there are several trends that we're seeing when it comes to student needs. So we have our general kind of more physical aggression type of behavior. That's in the realm that we're unsafe. We have our kind of, we're just a disruption. So we might be loud. We might have a lot of movement in our day. And that's kind of another area we see a need in. But we're also seeing this big need come in the area of intellectual disability. So students who have comorbidity with other disorders or other needs, such as communication needs, that intellectual disability. So having that lower functioning IQ, we're seeing that self-regulation be in there. And then also just a sensory piece. I would say the last category we're seeing is kind of that trauma piece or that lack of emotional regulation. So I have these really big feelings and I don't know how to handle them. And depending on that need, kind of depends on where we go with that behavior support. So sometimes we are getting into the area of what we call an FBA BIP. So that's a functional behavior assessment and then a behavior intervention plan. So that's truly looking at what is the behavior trying to communicate. And how can we put a plan in place to help with that communication from the behavior?
Well, Cassie, as you share that, one thing that I would then want to ask as a follow-up is that obviously these services are going to help support the individual student because of those needs. But maybe before, and we will spend the bulk of today's time allocated to that, absolutely. And so I'm not trying to like elevate one side of the story or the other, but there's also an impact that that has on the classroom, I would imagine, in most of these cases. And so as we sort of paint the why, which we will certainly, again, develop further for the individual student and focus on for the duration today, can we kind of just set that up at the onset as well? Because I think we want to establish what these services provide to the individual, but also maybe to the class culture or to the school sometimes when those behaviors are, I'm assuming some things. I'll leave that space to you all to talk.
Personally, when I go in, it's typically for an individual student who's definitely disrupting the classroom. But sometimes when I go in, what I'm seeing is it's not just one student. It could be multiple. And so that's when we kind of take a step back and I say, hey, I think maybe we need Danny to come in. And Danny really focuses at that whole classroom level. So she works with coaching that teacher to say, do we have our expectations and routines in place? Are we using positive reinforcement? And not so much as coming in and saying, are we doing this? But really coming from a coaching standpoint of, here's the data of what I'm seeing in your classroom. What do you want your classroom to look like? And what can we do from there? And so individual students, yes, have an impact on that classroom environment, but we're also seeing that we can help the teachers impact that classroom environment also.
Right. If we look at Hattie's research, and it talks about the teacher as the classroom leader and the effectiveness that that teacher has. The way that we've kind of designed our supports is such that we respect the power that the teacher has in making that classroom an effective learning space and making sure that we are building their capacity to feel that efficacy, to be able to really have the impact on those student behaviors, whether it's at the individual or a small group or at the classroom level, but building their efficacy so that they really feel like they are in control and have the skills that they need to be able to positively impact any sort of behavior disruptions that could be happening.
Oh, and I would imagine, like anything else, when you learn a little bit about that, in maybe as a result of a situation, that professional learning over the course of a career can play out in other scenarios that would have a range in terms of their impact on maybe the collective. But what that professional learning has to be doing is creating better best practices for teachers in a myriad of contexts beyond the present. Is that fair to say too?
Absolutely. So my teacher hat by trade is a high school math teacher. And I remember the very first behavior training that I had was at the Lincoln PBIS conference, positive behavior conference. And I was just wowed by the speakers and the information. And I think that Allie Hearn may have been one of the speakers. And that's when I became an Allie Hearn fangirl. And so if anybody is not sure who Allie Hearn is, you need to look her up because she's amazing with her approach to building that classroom environment and that school environment. But then the second, I think, most profound learning opportunity that I had was CPI training when I was here at ESU4. And CPI is the Crisis Prevention Institute. They're most known for restraint and seclusion teaching, how to do safety interventions for individuals in distress. However, they are so proactive in their response, trying to prevent the behavior from happening in the first place. And I remember walking out of that training and feeling like, wow, if I had known this, I would have been a much better teacher because I would have known how to de-escalate when a student starts to show that anxiety. And CPI defines anxiety as a change in typical behavior. So I'm not talking about needing a paper bag to breathe, what you see in the movies. I'm talking about when they start to tap their pencil or fidget or pace or take deep breaths or their voice tone changes or they get flushed or whatever it is, you know, those sort of things. And I just remember wishing that I had had that. And so I think that the services that we provide now, when I go in to help a teacher, or Cassie and I are both CPI certified trainers. So when we go in and we have that filter and what we're looking at, we can really help teachers understand that you don't know what you don't know. And that's why we're here to help you. And so it's never a guilt trip. It's never a gotcha. It's really is in the spirit of, we want to help you have success in your classroom and we want you to feel comfortable in your classroom. So please call us. Just please. We are here to help.
Wow. And I love that also illustrates that, because you said you went through that training at ESU4, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So there's certainly another, I always like to highlight the roles in which ESU is like playing, trying to move these types of efforts forward. Exactly. And maybe that's a good pivot too, then, to say as well, Danny, because you gave a little backstory there to your own exposure to professional learning. Can you give us maybe the backstory to ESU4's program as it has evolved into what it is today?
Absolutely. So in 2014, we had noticed, and this was before I was on staff, and so a lot of this information comes from either historical data or Ellen, who is our special ed director. And she said that in 2014, there were a group of school psychologists that went down to MSLBD, which is the Midwest Symposium for Leadership and Behavior Disorders. It's in Kansas City. It is probably the pinnacle of behavior conferences in the region, maybe the nation. I haven't been outside of this region for behavior conferences yet, but there were a group of our ESU4 school psychologists and Ellen that had gone down, and knowing that our schools were demonstrating a need for behavior support, they started to kind of envision what this behavior support might look like for schools. There were some pretty significant student behaviors that were coming up and looking like violence or destruction or just kind of that we'll use the hand model of the brain, and we'll talk about getting into that limbic region where you're really running on emotion and your brain is not actually thinking a lot. And so those observations and experiences that our districts were having is what drove this conversation to begin with. And so 2014 started with school psychologists just consulting in our ESU4 districts as needed and requested. And again, if you build it, they will come. It grew quickly, much quicker than I think they anticipated it would. And so the next year, they hired a behavior teacher and created a self-contained classroom with a plan and a structure that I think was very similar to, it had some Boys Town principles. It had some principles from other level three as kind of what we call this sort of program, but other level three programs where their least restrictive environment is no longer in the classroom with their peers because of the impact to the peers being so significant. And it's impeding the students' learning because they're not able to regulate to learn. So it was in its own self-contained classroom for a while. Eventually, it ended up moving here to Auburn to a building owned by ESU4 called the Learning Center, which also has our 18 to 21 transition program. It's students who are between graduating high school and receiving adult services at age 21. So it's a job skills and that sort of thing. So we had that program here at the Learning Center and had, I believe, two or three teachers and a handful of paras all in this one program supporting these students. And then the pandemic hit, and as everything else, it changed kind of what was happening where and what the need was. And so eventually in 2021, the decision was made that at that point, the ideal would be to keep the students in their districts. And again, ESU4 serves in a way that what our districts say they need is what we figure out how to make happen. And so we took this to our superintendents, and Ellen and I spent about probably 6 months trying to brainstorm and lay the foundation for what really did our behavior support, what did it need to look like to, one, give students what's best for them. What do students need? Because that's always what drives us, is what's best for students. But then also, what is it that our districts need? Because they know their own worlds best. And so at that point, we decided to go ahead and shift the program back to the individual districts and really aim for keeping students in their individual schools. But we knew that that meant having to build capacity of schools, of the administration, the teachers, the paras, the support staff, take your pick. We knew that if we were going to be advocating for students to stay in their districts, we also were maybe taking the responsibility to ensure they were trained properly. And so at that point, we made the decision to hire a behavior consultant. We were lucky enough to get Cassie. She's phenomenal at what she does. And so currently our behavior program looks like myself coaching at a classroom level, coaching and consulting at that classroom level, and then Cassie going in to districts to support at the student level. So I primarily work with the classroom teacher. I might work with paras if they're also in the room. And I definitely work with the students in terms of being in and observing, but not typically hands-on. But then Cassie goes in and she really works with the students' individual teams and the teachers also. So we are not simply a one and done. We are very involved in the process from start to when we feel like it's finished.
It's almost kind of two, I don't know if I want to call them tiers maybe, but just, I'm thinking about it almost like a Venn diagram that starts with the student and the supports that would kind of circle out around from that. That would be Cassie's role, if I'm not mistaken. And then Danny, yours is certainly a part of that world, but maybe encompasses some other individuals, right? That would kind of bring, I'm calling that tiers for lack of a better way of saying it.
Yeah, no, I think that's the case. And actually, we've seen that beautiful MTSS pyramid put into Venn diagrams with all, some, few. And I think that is the best way to describe what Cassie and I do, is look at it as, just because Cassie's in watching an individual student, it doesn't mean she's not also observing how it's impacting others. And there have been times where Cassie's called in and she'll say, hey, I think this is a classroom level. I think we need to consider this as well. Or I'll go in and I'll say, this really isn't a classroom level, Cassie. This is maybe one or two kids. Let's see what we need to do to shift. And so the beauty of Cassie and I getting to work so closely together is we have a shared language and a shared understanding of what it might look like and what adjustments may need to be made to really hit what's best for kids.
Yeah, let's go there then, Cassie, please.
Well, I was just going to add on to what Danny said too. I think there are also a few instances where we're both involved. So it's that classroom level support and that individual student. And so that shared understanding and that shared language is even more important when it comes to those pieces. But yeah, I am more than happy to go into what that behavior consultation piece looks like. So we started with a pretty big referral process last year with a Google form and found that it was kind of limiting the number of referrals we got just because it was kind of cumbersome. And so we have made some changes from last year to this year where now it's a phone interview. So it's really about a conversation of building that understanding on where the classroom teacher is at and what they've tried with the individual student, what those concerns are with the individual student, and just trying to get a grasp on what the situation is before I head in. And then I complete a couple observations. I set it at 2, but that's pretty flexible. If they're like, hey, today was a really weird day, I don't know, you being here, you watching them, there are no behaviors, please come back. Like, I'm always like, it's okay, that happens all the time. And so from there, we go to that team meeting and I kind of come with some recommendations to consider. But I would say my biggest piece is this is the classroom teacher. He or she knows their classroom. They know their school best and they know that student best. And so while these are my recommendations, I'm only the expert in behavior. I'm not the expert in the student or the classroom or the school. So let's work together to come up with ideas that fit your classroom. And then we typically try to observe, schedule out a couple observations after that, and then re-meet as a team. So we kind of use that MTSS process of 6 to 8 weeks for an intervention. Then I want to come back and look at where you're at. Behavior consultation has looked different with each team and with each school. We had a school district where Danny and I both went in and supported creating a level 3 self-contained program within their school because we don't offer that as an ESU4 and it was a service that was needed. Within there, I felt kind of like a spy. We created a model where I could coach the paraeducators. And so they would put an earbud in and I'm sitting in my office observing through Zoom and using a swivel device. And I'm able to coach them in the minute of, hey, I want you to give this prompt to the student, or this is how I want you to reinforce them, or let's step back and give them some time and space right now. Don't interact. And so I think getting creative with how we have offered services has opened some avenues that we weren't expecting before, or that maybe as an ESU we hadn't explored before. I'm trying to think of other ways that we've supported. I've gone in and modeled for teams, so kind of been in the nitty and gritty with them, living it with them. And I think when it comes to our small districts, they really appreciate that. They really appreciate that hands-on approach and having somebody who's in it with them.
We will also use, I think Cassie mentioned video, but we'll use the swivel device. We have several of those that we've received from, I believe, Title IIA grants, or individual schools have purchased them. And so even at the classroom level, if our presence in a classroom is going to disrupt how the students act, which is typically the case, somebody new's in here, we're going to act differently, either better or worse. We'll use the swivel device and go set it up for the teacher, teach them how to use it, and then they'll share the video with us and we can see what's actually happening with the students or with the teacher. And there have been times where it is a really simple fix. It is as simple as, hey, let's look at the classroom flow of traffic when they come in the morning, because the teacher said from the very beginning of the day, they're just everywhere. They're all over the place. They're arguing with each other. They're fighting with each other. Well, when we looked at video, they're always crossing paths and running into one another. And so I said, it's just like a traffic jam in the morning, which if you have a traffic jam, you're going to be cranky too. We call those precipitating factors, right, Cassie? And so how is it that we can stand or shift? And so we put tape, we put arrows on the floor, and the students loved it. And from the very first day, it was peaceful. And so it's not always this great big meeting. You know, I think sometimes we think that it's going to be this meeting of the minds and we're going to have this big ornate plan, and it was tape on the floor. And so I think that those are some of the little things we can do too. And I think of the times as a teacher, you know, like I said earlier, where I'm like, I don't know, one, I don't know what I don't know, but man, if I had thought about this, you know, before the situation, I wouldn't have had this headache or that issue or this argument. So that's what we get to do, is we get to go in and help teachers think of the things that they're overwhelmed. They've got a lot on their minds. So we get to go in and help them problem solve some things to make their lives easier.
I think sometimes people think we're going to come in with a magic wand and just like flick it and things are going to be better. And unfortunately, we don't have those powers.
We don't have the easy button. That's just things.
Yeah. There's no easy button here. So I think back to, we had, through some of our Hope Champions work, we'd watched a video about the wolves being introduced to Yellowstone. I don't know if you've seen that one, Andrew, but where just this small change has huge impacts on the environment. And that's kind of where we want to start. We want to start with, are there small changes that we can make that are going to affect the whole classroom, the student, the teacher, the paraeducators, to create that safe environment? I would say trauma sensitive classroom, right? Without that foundation, MTSS has it in my brain that like, we can't stand on a foundation of jello, right? And introducing small things and creating that solid foundation, we're going to be able to build up from there.
And I really appreciate that we're getting the opportunity to talk a little bit about what that means for teachers, because I know that teacher recruitment and retention is a conversation we've had statewide in the midst of teacher shortages and people finding some of these challenges as reason to leave the profession in some instances. And oftentimes teachers just want to feel supported. And so it's great that our ESUs and folks like yourself are in those support roles, so teachers feel seen in the struggles that they're having and have the opportunity then to like develop some new practices that again, are going to help the student. And we certainly want to keep them at the forefront. But these other pieces, as you talked about the Yellowstone example there, Cassie, are certainly, you know, you make one change there and all of a sudden, as an educator, I stop dreading fourth period and whether or not I'll be able to facilitate that in a way that I can feel good about at the end of the day. And it brings your anxiety down. And we know there's research out there that says when the teacher's anxiety is up, the class's anxiety levels are up. They feel like even the cotton swab mouths to figure that stuff out. There was like some research that went into that was really interesting. And so as we like almost help teachers maybe de-escalate their own anxiety about being in situations where you're oftentimes in front of 30 students and having to respond to something like this, it's healthier for them. It's healthier for the individual that they're getting the chance to serve and support and help hopefully teach them a little bit more about how to self-regulate. Right. And then as a result, yeah, the entire classroom. And I love that it can be as simple as putting arrows on the floor. And that's why, you know, you have to have professionals like yourselves that can come in and be in those support roles and gosh, speak from the wealth of experiences that I'm sure you've had by being able to support in multiple schools and multiple circumstances. And I don't know where I'm going with the question with that, but I love all of it. Right. Can I just say that? And so, yeah, what are some maybe like trends, I guess, that you're seeing now that I'm starting to think more broadly, given the fact that the two of you are in multiple schools across different districts?
Yeah. So when I think of individual student needs and the trends I've seen in classrooms, we've definitely seen an increase in students who struggle to emotionally regulate their bodies. And so I think that's been a huge focus of how can we teach them how to regulate themselves? How can we teach them to notice the signs that they're dysregulated? I think that's where it starts. Danny had talked about those precipitating factors earlier, but what is it that we're picking up on students that tell us they're on edge? You know, are they clenching their fists? Is their head down on the table? Are they saying no? Sometimes we overlook those little signs and we don't pay attention to them and we're not addressing them. And so then they become the bigger behaviors. Outside of emotional regulation, we've also seen executive functioning as a huge need right now. So our neurodivergent population, whether that be autism or ADHD, is definitely a need in the classrooms. They may not be our students who are aggressive, but there are students who are a distraction to the classroom just because they need that movement or they need help with blurting, whatever that case might be. And then I would say the third individual student need that we're seeing is those students with intellectual disabilities and comorbidities that are, they're impacted in multiple ways. So it's their communication that's impacted. It's their academic learning that's impacted. Some of them are even having physical impairments, sensory needs. And so how do we program when it seems like they have so many needs? How do we prioritize those needs and build the capacity of our teachers to meet those needs? And I think specifically when we think about those student populations, we're not just building our understanding of the teachers, but that's where the parents are coming in also. So we're building the understanding and the skill level of the parents within those trends too.
So is it part of those interactions then to not only communicate what you're seeing to parents, but also to maybe suggest similar strategies so that there's a consistency across the ways in which they're working to grow at school to self-regulate and what they may be asked to do at home?
Most definitely. One of my first recommendations when I go in from a team is if I hear that the student is seeing an outside therapist, that we're getting parents and the outside therapist on board. We want that common language to be in all environments. The more we practice that missing skill, the more the students hear that common language, the easier it's going to be for their brains to build that pathway to a more effective and functioning behavior than the misbehavior we're seeing. Specifically with those students who have trauma and they're kind of living in that emotional brain rather than that rational brain, that's where they're going to need that practice and that similar language at home, at school, and in every area of their life.
Dan, do you have anything to add?
So I think that the old adage, none of us is as smart as all of us, definitely comes into play. Because if we try to, you know, when Cassie goes in to support an individual student, if she's the only one that knows what's supposed to be happening, it's her job the whole time. The student's never going to get anywhere unless she's there. And so when she goes in, she is very open, and there's a delicate line that we walk as an ESU, because we serve the districts and we know the importance that the parents play in the team. And we also know that we have to kind of walk the line of making sure that everyone knows that we're all on the same team and not saying or doing something that puts us in the middle or creates an issue. And it would be a mistake to say that everything is always very zen and we get along. Everybody on the team always gets along and we sing songs when we're on the table. I mean, that's not how it goes. However, it's much more effective when we're able to build those relationships. And that's a huge part of what Cassie and I do, is try to build the relationships, not only with the school, but also with the parent. Sometimes a positive relationship, I can think of one instance in particular, and I'm sure there are more, of where the school and the parent may have had a fractured relationship. Cassie and I are able to come in as the neutral third party, and then we are able to help facilitate repairing that relationship. The most successful teams that students have are the ones where the parent and the school can get on the same page and work together. My oldest son has autism, and he had some major behavior problems when he was younger. And we met regularly as a team with all of the people in the school that were working with him, and then my husband and I. And that is, I believe, why he has had so much success, is because we were all working on the same team. We were on the same page of the book. We always tried to stay one step ahead of where we thought he was going to be going. And with Cassie and I, that's what we really try to build within the teams we're working with, is that collaborative nature, and we're all on the same page.
So important on so many levels and so nuanced. And to be in a space where you're doing that each and every day across multiple, wow, just incredible the work that you all are doing. And, you know, gosh, I say it every week, but 30 minutes goes really fast. So we are kind of getting near the end of our time here today. But before we started recording today, we did talk a little bit about maybe a little like a mantra or a quote that you all sort of live by a little bit that you thought might be good for us to bring things to a close on. And I'm really grateful for that. So I'll just turn things over and say, Cassie, yeah, do you want to share that? And we'll let that be our parting message for today.
Yeah, Danny, we talked about two. Is there one that you prefer?
I think the simple one.
Okay. So one of our biggest things here is don't make assumptions. And that's going to lead into kind of our, something I get preachy about, I guess. but when students are coming into your classroom and you make assumptions that they've learned something, that somebody has taught them something, that's often when we are going to see a struggle, because you don't know who's taught that student what. All you can predict is what you're going to teach them in your classroom. And so when we look at our core subjects like reading, writing, math, we are always using this teach, practice, reinforce, repeat, right? But when it comes to behavior, our mind is often going to punish, punish, punish. However, any behavior, no matter how big, how small, if we could just take a step back and teach students how to do that behavior, practice that behavior, reinforce that behavior, and repeat it as needed, we would see so much more progress than the mindset of punish, punish, punish. So I think when we're going into classrooms, when we're talking with parents, paraeducators, and teachers, when I'm modeling with students, that is something we're trying to show, not tell. I don't want to just tell them that you need to teach these skills, but how do we teach them, and really truly showing them how to teach those skills.
Yeah. And Andrew, I think in addition to Cassie's, I think I would just say, if we can have the mindset that behavior is communication and what is causing this communication, I think that starts to change how we approach it as well. Instead of punish, it is teach.
Wow. It makes me think too, while we're on the quote train here, I got to go to the NASA's conference a couple years back when it was a rising tide floats all ships.
Yeah. High tide floats all ships. Yeah.
High tide. Yes. and I just hear that so prevalent in the examples that you've given today, that by going in and providing support to the student, to the teacher, to the para, to the administrators, the support of everyone's collaboration, and then the roles that you all get to play in your respective parts of that Venn diagram, wow, raising the tide. And hopefully everybody gets to float. I don't know, I want to play the metaphor out too much, but you know what I'm saying? Like that it kind of like brings everybody right to a different place and to feel supported. And I'm just so grateful to the both of you for taking a little time out of your busy schedule doing that very work to share on the podcast today, and really inspired too to get a chance to get a little window into the great work that you're doing at ESU4. And a shout out to others across the state that are in similar spaces as well. It's always fun to connect and learn from those folks too that are out there in like positions. And so is there anything we should put in the show notes we could point people to if they wanted to learn more, read more, find out more about your program at ESU4?
So we have what we call timely tidbits, which are newsletters that we put out with information that is, of course, timely. And then this year, we're also starting with behavior bites. So Danny is putting out small pieces of behavior, tidbits that don't take as much reading as my timely tidbits.
Cassie's got some really amazing stuff in the timely tidbits. It's a newsletter format, and she does try to make it applicable to what's going on in the student behavior at the time. So,
well, terrific. I will put the link in the show notes so others can continue to follow you and the great work that you're doing. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andrew.